a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Well, we've been watching the congressional hearings, of course, late last week, weighing in on the nationwide TikTok ban after the grilling of the CEO over the company's Chinese owner, ByteDance, and the possible mental health and security risks. And I thought it was interesting that the mental health component took up a good chunk of those hearings late last week. The security risks, I think, are well documented. The question really for me is, how much access does the Chinese government have to TikTok and other tech companies? What's the best way forward, given what we know so far? We want to get past the headlines and all the hysteria and the panic button stuff and have a real conversation. We're really pleased to have joining us on the show today. Paul Bingham is a former FBI agent and is a vice president and dean at Western Governors University's College of Information Technology, where he specializes in cybersecurity. And that seems to be the word of the day today. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Boyd. I'm happy to be with you.
So as you have been following along, first kind of give us a broad brush sense in terms of where do you think we are in terms of state government, federal government, what's happening, and kind of the conversation where we are.
Oh, sure. As you know, with social media, there are two major areas of concern. As you said, privacy and security, like what data are they collecting and what are they doing with it? And then protecting our kids, mental health, bullying, sexual exploitation implications. And I think what makes this TikTok situation so unique is that it adds another layer to the privacy and security concerns because its corporate ownership is subject to Chinese government rule, access, and potentially control. I think it's important to remember a common phrase that relates to online services, and that is, if you're not paying for the service, then you are the service. The platforms are monetizing you and the access to your data. And again, the extra layer of concern around TikTok is that in addition to a social media company learning all they can about you and potentially manipulating you into doing what they want, you now have the potential for an adversarial government to be doing the same thing.
I think that's so important. And I just want to reemphasize something that you said there, Paul, and that is nothing is free. Nothing is free.
Yeah.
If you think that social media is free, you're paying for it in a host of ways. And the biggest way you're paying for it is by the way they can monetize your habits and where you choose to go.
Yeah, totally agree. And as you mentioned, the state governments, particularly our state government recently with the new law that was passed, and then the federal government, are trying to protect us as their citizens in both the privacy and security realms and protecting our children. But boy, it's a fine line between the perception of what is protection and what is censorship. And I think for companies operating in China or, you know, subject to Chinese laws and regulations, there are two kinds of access that I think we should consider. One is that the Chinese government has direct access and control through a persistent presence within the company, or perhaps access through legal or regulatory processes. Like here in the U.S., for example, that would take the form of a search warrant authorized by a judge. In China, where routine surveillance and monitoring of its citizens and visitors is far more intrusive than what we're used to here, the Chinese government has demonstrated that personal privacy really takes a backseat to government interests, and access to data is the norm. There's another kind of common refrain out there that says, in China, there's really only one tech company, and it is called the Chinese government. Mm. So I don't think that it's terribly overreaching for many of our lawmakers to be to be concerned about, as I said before, the potential for an adversarial government to be accessing our data.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and I want to have you weigh in on one area. We often don't connect the dot between cybersecurity and kind of behavior influence. And clearly, we know what the algorithms can do. We know that TikTok has really mastered them in some pretty scary ways in terms of their ability to influence our patterns and our behavior. And so, as you mentioned, Paul, with an adversarial government with China, should we be worried from a cybersecurity standpoint that they could, through all of those algorithms, actually manipulate and influence the behavior of citizens, young people in particular, in a way that would be a security threat?
Potentially, yes. As you mentioned, what makes TikTok so popular is that suggestion algorithm, you know, quickly learning what it is that a particular user is interested in and serving up more of that. And with all social media platforms, they run algorithms to try and tailor the content to the user to get the user to consume more. Again, most social media platforms that we think about, they're doing that to leverage or capitalize the money-making opportunity from that. And our concern here is that on top of that, do you have a government who may use this, as you said, to manipulate a certain population of people to start driving either their conversations or their way of thinking or even what they're, you know, researching or looking into as far as perspectives and opinions. The other aspect that really should be considered, and I think it's why a lot of state governments have banned TikTok from state-owned devices, and that is the potential for targeting specific populations to learn more about them, to learn more about the things that they're doing online, and be able to more effectively figure out what they can to then potentially compromise that population.
Yeah, and that's such a fascinating thing to get into there. And I also want to kind of temper that with the kind of the flip side, and you've acknowledged this in terms of, you know, make sense on government devices, state government devices in particular. But we also have to beware of this censorship, this very slippery slope of who gets to control what, who gets to decide what we get to do there. How do we properly balance that, especially as it relates to federal government and state and local government?
I think it's really challenging, Boyd. I saw some media coverage of this discussion and it compared it to the laws that came into effect many years ago regarding tobacco usage or alcohol usage and setting age limits for those things for the better good of society. And because social media platforms have been largely unregulated, it's really going to be some interesting and perhaps precarious waters that our political representatives are going to wade into, because now you have a whole generation that has grown up consuming this material on a daily basis, and you're talking about potentially taking it away from them. I think well, first, I'm glad I'm not a politician trying to make the right decisions on this. But secondly, I think that really user awareness, I know that the app stores or the Google Play Store, they tell you when you sign up for an app, here's all the access that it has. But I wonder if perhaps a good starting point is a splash screen that maybe once a day, which would be annoying to a lot of people, but once a day pops up and says, the company who owns who owns this app is headquartered in, and, you know, enter country or city or whatever. Yeah. And as a reminder, when you use this app, they have complete access to the following information or data. Right. And because I think educating people is the first step towards creating awareness and eventually potentially creating safer online user behavior.
That's such great perspective. I think that's an important part of this conversation is again, how do we do this different? And I think we've got to think different, that it's not total ban, not total government control, and having some education and awareness around that, I think, is real crucial. Finally, Paul, before I let you go, anything else from your unique perch, looking at this kind of through the cybersecurity lens, that you're watching or things you wish we were talking about more broadly?
Having children of my own, and having experienced a lot of sad and traumatic events, much like you're talking about with the school shooting, with my time at the FBI and seeing devastation wrought upon families. I just can't recommend enough for parents and teachers and civic groups who deal with young people to have open conversations with them, not only about what it is that they're consuming, but about their feelings about it. So much is going on right now, and I think we just can't do enough to help provide a little perspective and sometimes a more experienced perspective to what our children and our youth are experiencing online.
Yeah, so important. Paul Bingham, former FBI agent, and he's the vice president and dean at Western Governors University College of Information Technology, where he specializes in cybersecurity. Paul, we really appreciate your unique perspective and some great depth on this issue, and we look forward to having you back as we continue the conversation, I'm sure, as we move forward in the weeks and months ahead.
Thank you, Boyd. Sounds great. Thanks again.
All right. Again, that's Paul Bingham from Western Governors University, and really great perspective there. Again, a lot of times we don't think about cybersecurity in the context of behavior influence, which is a big part of what these apps are doing. All right. We'll step aside for a commercial break. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.